This podcast is brought to you by Kefir Her. Whether you're feeling the effects of menopause or your menstrual cycle, discover what's key for you in less than 5 minutes with tailored supplement recommendations, information and insights on kefirher.com.
Hi, I'm Renee.
And I'm Donna. Welcome to the Key for Her podcast.
In this series, we aim to educate and open up honest conversations with both medical professionals and real life women.
We want to shine a light on those topics that sometimes go unspoken about and help empower women to know what is key for their health and well-being. I think it's important that we discuss these four different menstrual cycle phases.
So. Yeah, exactly. So just from a very high level point of view, the five phases or the four phases, I kind of refer to five phases, but to, most people will refer to four. Phase one is when you're bleeding, so menstruation. So that's the shedding of the uterine lining. And then you move into the follicular phase, which is when your estrogen starts to rise. And that is because the follicle on your ovary is starting to develop, and that's, you know, getting it prepared for ovulation. So as that's developing, it's starting to produce estrogen, and that's really building up the uterine lining, which in turn will become what you shed in the next
period.
Exactly. Yeah. And then once that hits a threshold, you get that surge of luteinizing hormone, which I mentioned before, that you can test with the little pee sticks. And that kind of is like the little last final push where you ovulate. And then it's only if you ovulate that follicle that was growing the egg on the ovary becomes the corpus luteum, and we move into the luteal phase. And that's the that's when we're kind of producing progesterone. So we get a little dip in estrogen, but then estrogen progesterone start to rise again. And then we start moving into that premenstrual phase, which again, if no fertilization and implantation has occurred, the hormones start to drop, so our progesterone levels start to decline, and that then in turn triggers our uterine lining to start to shed, and then that's what causes our next menstrual cycle. So you can kind of break it into these four phases, or I tend to kind of slot in ovulatory phase, so I tend to go menstruation, pre-ovulatory, ovulatory, post-ovulatory, and then premenstrual. Because again, I just think there's some slight nuances in there, but you know, most people would be referring to it as the four phases or four seasons.
What can people do with their lifestyle and diet and exercise to help their hormones and help them feel better? Like for your average Joe.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. And I tend to discuss this, and for anyone who's been to one of my talks, they'll kind of recognize this as like a pyramid. And we've got like the bottom tier, which is really that kind of general well-being and lifestyle stuff that's going to help us regardless of who we are.
Or what age you are.
What our goals are, whether it's performance, whether it's, you know, aesthetics. And generally, I don't tend to work with people in that area, but, you know, if that is a goal, whether it's kind of your hormone health. And that's things like stress management. What food are you eating? Like, are you generally eating whole foods? But also, what's your relationship with food like? Do you have flexibility around your food, or are you really, really rigid about it? Do you have food rules? Do you have moral kind of approaches to food? This is good, this is bad, etc. Because that's really, really important and causes a huge stress as well, regardless of kind of going down the road of like disordered eating and binge eating and all this kind of stuff. Then it's things like, what's your sleep like? What's your overall training like? Are you getting strength training in? Are you getting a HIIT? Are you getting kind of a bit of restorative exercise? Or is it all HIIT 5 days a week? And then for anyone who's got a cycle, are you tracking your cycle, and do you have a basic understanding of that? And then once you kind of have those boxes ticked, you can kind of go up the next level, being like, okay, let's look at how I'm adjusting my training around my menstrual cycle. Now that I know that I'm fueling myself around my training, that I'm kind of making sure that I'm generally managing my load, and that's training load. So, you know, looking at maybe adjusting your training around your menstrual cycle based on your cycle and how you feel.
What kind of training should you do in phase one, two, three, and four?
There's like, kind of different approaches on this. And if you go look at the research paper, there's kind of mixed results on it where some people are like, there's no evidence to support phase-based training, where others are like, yes, there is evidence to support phase-based training.
Who worked on that study? Was it a guy by any
chance? No, it wasn't. So they've all been done by women. But really what it comes down to is that the research that's out there, so these research papers were meta-analysis, so it's looking at all the different research papers, and basically the research that's out there, a large proportion of it is low quality or moderate quality. They had a very small amount of kind of high quality papers. So, you know, from that then people have come out and started to kind of write guidelines on how to perform tests based around the menstrual cycle that look at hormones and all this kind of stuff. So it's actually been a good thing. But from the studies that I've done and from the kind of the training that I've done, and then going on to reference a few papers now as well, generally speaking, when estrogen is higher, which is in that first part of our menstrual cycle, so after you start bleeding, kind of typically from day three, you start to kind of produce more estrogen, and then that kind of peaks, as I said, up until ovulation. So if we're taking, let's say, that typical textbook 28-day cycle where you are ovulating on day 14, that kind of first 2 weeks, definitely moving into that second week, is when you're producing estrogen. We also get a little spike of testosterone as well during this phase. And estrogen and progesterone are anabolic, which means that they grow muscle. We are better able to take on load. We're better able to kind of recover from the training that we're doing. There were some studies now, I think there's only like 3 or 4 of them, that was in kind of one research paper that looked at resistance training in particular, so kind of strength training. And they found that when people trained more during this phase, during our follicular phase, when our estrogen is higher, so it was 5 times a week in the follicular phase, and then once a week in the luteal phase, so after we ovulate and when progesterone is higher, that had better outcomes for muscle gain and muscle size, and I believe muscle strength, in comparison to obviously the inverse, but also the typical 3 times a week training over all phases of your menstrual cycle.
So they're making the best of it while their estrogen is high, now, and then taking it easier after they ovulate.
Exactly. And the thing is, it's not that you can't train after you ovulate. And again, this is kind of more drawing on the physiological side, and I'll talk a little bit more about how you're feeling emotionally and energetically and kind of within your own body. But just purely from the kind of research so far, is that progesterone can just make it a little bit harder to recover. So we're more likely to have kind of, I believe it's like exercise induced damage from our muscles. So we need more things like making sure we're getting enough protein, making sure that we're kind of, you know, getting in. We can also have kind of more inflammation around this stage as well. So making sure we're getting more antioxidant foods, anti-inflammatory foods, making sure we're fueling ourselves as well, because for some people there are basal metabolic rate can actually increase in that premenstrual or our menstrual phase. So when we're hungrier, actually are hungrier. It's not that you like are having cravings and you've no willpower. It's actually just that
sometimes like a few days like before your period, you feel like there's a hole there and you just can't fill it.
So just having that in mind and like planning for that is so important. And that's what I think it kind of allows people to plan their self-care better and plan their recovery better. And then again, I think there's research studies on looking at like balance and proprioception and stuff like this, which is why when I was doing the Dr. Stacey Sims course, her recommendation was during the luteal phase was to look at kind of more technique-based things, more kind of, so let's say, for example, you've been trying to squat and you're trying to get like 100 kgs on your squat. You're kind of hitting those metrics and you're building up that kind of strength training power, really going for the low reps, high weights kind of in that lead up to ovulation. And then maybe you're kind of looking more on your kind of muscular endurance in that kind of post-ovulatory phase. And then when you move into the luteal phase, you're looking more at techniques. You're dropping that weight way back. You're looking at what's your breathing technique like. Can you get a little bit lower? Maybe you're working on more single leg stability. And again, what's interesting for anyone who's playing a field-based sport is that around ovulation, the estrogen can be a little bit higher, and there's studies that are showing that this higher level of estrogen can have an impact on your ligament laxity. And ligament laxity makes you more likely or more at risk of things like ACL injuries or tendon injuries. And, you know, as the basic biomechanics of women as well is that our hips are wider than our knees, which means that we're generally more at risk of ACL injuries anyway. So this can be exacerbated. I think there's a study that looked at footballers, and it's quite a longitudinal one, which means it looked at that over a period of time. And it does seem to suggest that
so what phase are we more?
So that's when you're ovulating.
When you're ovulating. So you're more susceptible to an injury if you were professionally training or
potentially if you're playing a field-based sport. So something that has a lot of change of direction. So making sure that we're doing things like having strong glutes and hamstrings. So like, you know, are we doing hinges? Are we doing glute bridges? Are we kind of doing single leg balance work? You know, are we working on core stability, not core crunches, but core stability and kind of change of direction? Plyometrics, things like this can really kind of help mitigate against those injuries. But, and again, it's not anything new. Like all of these training modalities are, they're there already, but it's just knowing when and why to implement them.
Timing,
yeah, exactly. For someone who's training, or for specifically a female athlete. And that's really where I was kind of interested in. But now what I've kind of moved more towards is like the everyday woman.
This is what I was going to say too, because I am not a professional athlete.
Like, it's fascinating.
And I was wondering what you would recommend to me as a mom trying to stay fit and healthy. Mm. What can I do during my different menstrual cycle phases? What would you recommend?
Yeah, and I think that's such a good question, because realistically that's who I am. Like, you know, I'm okay. So yeah, I like training, but I'm not going for any performance goals or any, you know, kind of even weight goals. And maybe I will down the line when work's less stressful. But, you know, like most of us are just doing it because we want to be healthier and feel a little bit better. And we know that it's good for ourselves. So what I would say in that situation is always start with that bottom of the pyramid, those big rocks, you know, like what are going to give me best bang for buck and make me feel good. And for a lot of us, it's looking at our relationship with exercise and our relationship with food. And when it comes to our relationship with exercise, what are the narratives there? Like, are you going hell for leather 1 week and then totally dropping off? Do you have the kind of narratives that I need to do this? Or are you able to kind of bring in that flexibility where you're like, okay, I'm wrecked today. I didn't sleep. My baby was up all night, or I'm really stressed in work. Okay, I'd planned this really hard training session, but you know what? I don't think that's the best thing for me. And I kind of refer to it as intuitive training. Mm. And that's more learning to listen to kind of where you are in your body and how you're feeling energetically, where you are in the phase of your menstrual cycle, to trust what your body's telling you and adapt based on that. And the question I get back to
not
that a lot of the times.
A hard time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're like, how do I know if I'm just being lazy or if I, you know,
is that just my lazy self,
I just,
or
like,
am I
not motivated,
not ready for this?
Exactly. And I'm like, legit question. Really, you can only know that. So it kind of comes through trial and error. And again, this is what all of my work comes back to, is learning how to trust your body and learning how to work with it a little bit more, rather than having to always rely on a trainer, an app, a Fitbit or whatever, you know. And not that there's anything wrong with any of those things, but I think we've become too over reliant on that. So learning how to do that, you know, how am I feeling in my warm-up? You can still go to your class, but you're like, oh god, I'm still wrecked after the warm-up. Just being like, okay, normally I lift 16 kg on this, I'm maybe going to drop it back to 12.
Yeah.
Or maybe, okay, I'm supposed to be working for like, you know, 30 seconds on whatever, but I might just go a little bit slower or take more rest. And who cares what the, you know, the coach says? Because you are able, firstly, you've body autonomy, so you can be like, no, doesn't work for me.
Yeah.
You can also turn around and be like, look, I'm really exhausted, I haven't slept well, or I'm premenstrual, or I'm bleeding, and this just isn't going to feel good for my body. So I'm taking a little step back, knowing that if you give yourself that rest, that you'll be able to kind of hit it harder in other sessions. So kind of looking at that and really looking at what your overall week is like. Are you doing the HIIT 5 days a week? If so, maybe could you take one of those out? Maybe could you slot in a strength? Maybe could you slot in a restorative yoga session? On your rest days, are you actually resting, or are you going for like, you know, like a hot yoga session and doing your, or doing a hike or something? Again, nothing wrong with those. They can emotionally, energetically fill us up, but physically, are you actually resting on those days? And just kind of taking those things in consideration. And then when it comes to nutrition, really trying to fuel yourself. And what I find, I'm a big advocate of intuitive eating and learning to kind of, you know, listen to your hunger cues, which I think so many of us are out of touch with. But realistically, in a busy world, you don't have the time to kind of be like, oh, I'm hungry now, I'm going to go make something. So having what I call grab and go foods, or, and I'm not saying that everyone needs to go and bulk cut and do the whole, like, you know, the chicken and broccoli and sweet potatoes. I more mean like, if you're making a dinner, make extra and you have that in the fridge so it's there for lunch. Okay. Or if you're putting on a roast chicken, like, could you now? Me, my partner is also a trainer, so when we put on a roast chicken, the thing's gone. But so, you know, we might be putting on like, you know, two roast chickens so that we've got one sitting there for us to like chop up and put into like wraps really quickly. So we've got to make sure that we've got like, you know, peppers that some people pre-chop up, but I'm not even that prepared. But you know, you can just have those things that are easy to go. Hard-boiled eggs, just have them in the fridge, yeah, ready to go.
Handy.
Tins of tuna that you can throw in with like a little bit of mayo and like kidney beans. Just these kind of list of go-to things that are quick and easy to turn together. Like
literally writing a list and even sticking it on your fridge, because sometimes you open the fridge and you're just blind to it all, but you have a little list of,
and you can't
remember
think
here's the things that you actually like to eat that are healthy.
Exactly.
I made that list before,
but that's it. And like it's not that you have to be like married to that list, but it's just kind of having a list of like go-tos that you're like, okay, perfect, I know that I've got the stir fry veg, the boil in the bag rice, the kind of soy sauce or whatever in the fridge. So if I come home and I'm wrecked, I know I've got the eggs, I can literally go, boom, boil in the bag rice, I'm going to fry up this stuff, I'm going to like crack in an egg and just whisk it all up. Perfect. Proteins, micronutrients, carbohydrates, fats. I've got a nutritious, filling dinner that took me 10 minutes and I didn't have to think about it. Generally speaking, like, what's your relationship with food? What's your relationship with training? Are you kind of ticking off the general boxes of things that make you feel good? Are you getting outside and looking after your mental health? Are you tracking your cycle? And once you kind of start to have those, then start fine-tuning it. Then start looking at, okay, just tweaking it with my menstrual cycle, maybe noticing how I'm feeling emotionally or even creatively across my menstrual cycle. Could I start kind of leaning into that more? Maybe am I creating more space? Okay, I notice actually that I feel really, really tired and headachy when I'm, you know, due my period. Am I noticing when that's coming up? And am I maybe blocking stuff off in my calendar?
That's
maybe
a good idea. Block off your calendar.
Yeah. Oh, I have it on my calendar. And like, sometimes it changes if I have a long cycle. But you know, like I put that in. So I'm like, okay, try not to do things around.
Yeah.
I try to give myself more space. I try not booking even social things as much around that time. And if anyone's curious, the book Wild Power, fascinating, really, really interesting. Maisie Hill's book as well, Period Power, is very, very good and kind of brings in that concept of the inner seasons and energetically this whole self-care. And really it all comes back to, whether it's training, nutrition, menstrual cycle tracking, meditation, it all comes back to that ability to get to know yourself better. And that for me has been kind of the, you know, when you have those penny drop moments where you're like,
listening to yourself.
Yeah.
But could we talk a little bit about just symptoms for a minute? Symptoms of the menstrual cycle and where they could be stemming from, and the nutritional, the role of nutrition with your menstrual cycle and the symptoms that you may be facing. I think that might be just good to cover.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I would say is, if you're having any sort of menstrual cycle disturbances, and I'll kind of talk about how that might show up if you are charting your menstrual cycle, it's really important you go and get the bloods done and kind of work with someone who's, I guess, not going to dismiss you, you know, because a lot of times you can get the bloods done and they're falling within this quote unquote normal range, but the range is crazy big. And really what those ranges are looking for is the presence of disease. It's not looking for optimal health. Now this is why I'm going to do the naturopathic nutritionist course, because I'm like, I want to be able to get those bloods for people, read them and be like, okay, ideally we want you to be here, ideally we want you to be here. I got that done and I went to a reflexologist and she was like, oh, your thyroid health. She's like, if you were trying to, she's like, it's not, you know, it's kind of like whatever, subclinical, or it's just a little bit low, I can't remember which one it was, but she's like, if you were trying to conceive, you'd probably struggle right now. And I'm like, but on paper my bloods are fine. There's nothing wrong with me, you know. So anyway, so it's just a point to that.
But like, but you talked about earlier, you know, you were suffering very badly with your skin, and you just went on the pill, you know, and and that was kind of our advice from, you know, probably friends or a doctor. Or so I suppose if women are suffering with different symptoms, where's the first place they should start?
Exactly. Well, first I'd say tracking your cycle, so looking at what's going on with your menstrual cycle, is falling within the parameters of what is deemed a kind of healthy or a normal menstrual cycle.
So how do you measure your period length, just for anyone who doesn't
know? So for anyone who's new to measure your period length, what you're looking for is first and foremost day one of your bleeding. So what day did you start bleeding? And it's important to note that the little bit of spotting that you might have,
that's
is
what
not
confuses people.
Exactly. And I was guilty of that. I was like, oh yeah, I've started on this, but actually it was 3 days of spotting, which again is another sign of low progesterone. But it's your first full day of bleeding, like kind of, you know, proper blood, should be a red color.
Where you'd need a tampon.
Exactly.
Or you'd need a pad.
It's more than a panty liner. And then you're looking at the number of days. So how long is that going on for? But also looking at the quantity. So a lot of times people are like, oh, my period's really heavy. But then when you actually look at it from a quantity point of view, it might only be kind of medium.
Mm.
So, you know, from a cup point of view, like a full cup or more within a day would be like a heavy day. Kind of maybe half a cup would be around medium, and then kind of anything kind of less than that would be light. And when we're thinking about tampons, you know, the kind of definition of a heavy menstrual period would be 16 regular tampons or pads or more over the course of your full menstrual cycle, which for some people when they hear that, they're like, oh, I'm popping like 3 super tampons a day, you know?
Yeah.
And again, I can't remember what it works out for the super tampons, but I think it's like maybe 3 times the absorbency. But you can look that up online. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the figures exactly off the top of my head. So just having an awareness of where you're falling within duration and also quantity, how much you're actually bleeding.
Mm.
And realistically, we should be between 3 and kind of 7 days normally is kind of what's kind of considered normal. If you're falling below the 3 days and it's very, very light, that would be considered a light period. Again, you should get that investigated. Potentially it's things like, you know, having low estrogen, you're not ovulating, and might be something else going on as well.
I suppose not to wait until you're looking to conceive to start looking at this, because I suppose you'd only end up kicking yourself if there was something you could have done years prior.
Yeah, it takes time for you to make these changes in your body, and also like trying to actually learn the ins and outs of in-depth cycle tracking, like you know, you got to learn it. Like it's not like, oh yeah, perfect. It's a skill. Like you've got to be like, okay, yes. And it's almost like taking a pill every day, where you've got to kind of be like, what's that happened? Where am I tracking that? You know, for me, I put it into an app. You can also write it in a journal.
And it'll take probably about 3 months to get kind of an idea of where you're at.
Exactly, what your baseline is. Get comfortable with the menstrual cycle tracking, and then start making the changes and seeing if that's gonna you know, make changes. So already we're talking about 6 months, and a lot of time people only start looking at this, they're like, right, I'm ready to go. And so I am always of the opinion that learning the stuff earlier on, obviously from health, but specifically from a fertility or trying to conceive point of view is helpful. You may be one of those people who are lucky and it just happens straight away, but you might not be, and there might be something going on, you know, trying to figure that out earlier on so that you can kind of give yourself the time to investigate and maybe kind of look at the treatments that are going to work best for you. And you know, that's only something that you can decide, and obviously there's lots of different avenues to go down.
So when you track your cycle, you should probably track your symptoms then as well.
Exactly,
because for a lot of women, cramping is the major issue. So what are your thoughts on that, and how could that be alleviated through their nutrition?
Yeah, so with the cramping and stuff like that, a lot of the times it comes down to prostaglandins. And again, so Maisie Hill's book is a great book to look at, and the period repair manual, there's lots of new ones as well. Lanice Brothers has another one, I think, that's come out. I haven't read yet, but she's fab, and it's called How to Fix Your Period. So all of these are really great tools that you can kind of look at them and kind of investigate that. But really looking at anti-inflammatory foods, so like, are you having, you know, we tend to want it, like the fried foods, the alcohol, like, you know, all this kind of stuff that can cause an inflammatory response. But
and sugar is
exactly, in the lead up to,
I don't think people realize it can play such havoc with hormones as well.
Exactly. And you know, that's where it comes down to that permission to kind of fuel yourself. So if you know you're going to be hungrier and you're going to need more of these snacks, having those grab and go nutritious snacks that are going to satisfy you, so like, you know, a bit of chocolate and some nuts, or like, you know, peanut butter on some rice cakes with, you know, an apple or whatever. And again, that might not float someone's boat, so it's just trying to kind of find what works for you. But introducing more things like oily fish, nuts and seeds, omega-3s, there's been studies done on that, huge impact on period pain and PMS symptoms as well. And then trying to reduce where possible those inflammatory foods can go a really, really long way, looking at things as well, like magnesium, like the foods that you're kind of eating, whether they're high in magnesium, you know, dark chocolate, green leafy vegetables, all this kind of stuff. I love cacao facilitator as well, for anyone who's into that vibe, and that's got a huge amount of magnesium as well. So you know, if you're into that, great time to be kind of having some cacao. Or again, that's basically dark chocolate, so you can always kind of get that in another way. Yeah, exactly. So
and is there certain nutrients deficiencies that can cause symptoms as well?
Yeah, so the main one that I tend to work with within my scope of work would be the overall nutrition and what you're consuming and under consuming, and the amount of recreational athletes. So like people who just train, go to the gym a few times a week, who are underfueling is huge. Absolutely.
So we are massive. Quite deficient, like even the non-athletes. Like ourselves.
So if you're active, like you just need to make sure that you're eating enough. And that for me is typically where I kind of see a lot of stuff. Often healthy fats, people aren't getting enough of that. So like nuts, seeds, flax seeds. Because of this whole thing with calories and not getting fat. But I'm like, your body needs them to produce. They're the building blocks of your hormones. You need to have that. And then obviously when we're looking at seeds and things like flax seeds and stuff, it's got like the phytoestrogen. So it helps kind of produce. And you know, there's this whole concept of seed cycling. But even just looking at the research at... flax seeds, amazing, or linseeds, where we are.
And can be really easily put into your diet.
So good. And then that's really important then for your fiber intake, your digestion, which again is really important for making sure that you're processing out the estrogen that your body has processed and that you're kind of not reabsorbing that. So it really helps with detox or helping to go down that detoxification pathway, which is a whole other thing.
Again, Maisie Hill goes into it.
That's like, I'm like, it's complicated, but really, really interesting, and it that can help reduce the symptoms of high estrogen, which are things like the PMS, the breast tenderness. Even people might have, say, kind of histamine-like symptoms around ovulation, and that often can be due to things like the high estrogen and not enough progesterone. So, kind of noticing things like that and potentially reducing histamine, reducing foods around ovulation. So, like wine, cheeses, stuff like that.
I know. I've heard of people saying before about. They've noticed that they end up having more arguments with their partner, you know, coming up to their period. But if they were more aware of it and they're like, oh, I'm sorry for saying that when I was due my period. Yeah. But if they were more, I mean, the partner was more aware of where she is in her cycle as well, they mightn't take it as much to heart. If you know what I mean? If they were just aware and had that kind of conversation about where they are, you know.
The ability to... So obviously we've been talking a lot about like the physical sides of menstrual cycle and symptoms and training and all this kind of stuff. But the lifestyle side of being aware of your menstrual cycle, and then even that kind of more spiritual self-care kind of side of it, when it comes to knowing and owning the fact that our energy can ebb and flow, is hugely, hugely empowering. And again, just personally speaking from my own experience, things like I get my words mixed up when I'm premenstrual. Even things like I tend to salivate a little bit more. I'm more likely to get headaches. I tend to be more tired. So I try to avoid doing talks. Now I've gone on and I've done talks.
Sorry about that.
Or I'm saying a word and I'm like, it doesn't make any sense, you know. But I kind of joke with my clients where I'm like,
your left foot, your right foot. But it's amazing that you're that in touch with yourself and you have gotten to know yourself that that you are aware of that.
But, and it just takes the pressure off because I'm like, okay, that's what's going on. Like even TV, I'm like, oh, that TV is so loud. And Craig's like, it's not that loud at all. But I'm like, no, it's too loud. You need to turn it down, you know, and stuff. And like, so people can have different responses to it. It's not going to say everyone's going to have the same. So this is why it's so important to track your cycle and understand how you feel physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually across the different phases of your cycle so that you get to know what's normal for you and you can help to incorporate that in, again, creatively. And I think Aisling Bay was talking about it with her work creatively. She read Maisie Hill's book and was like, this is amazing.
That book just...
Yeah.
But sometimes your creativity, you could be in a total state of flow.
Yeah.
And other days you're like, it's not happening.
Exactly. And again, people tend to like, you know, hate on the premenstrual phase. But really, if you tend to kind of befriend this phase and the Red School, they talk about it as your inner critic. But firstly, if you try and limit your inner critic to that only that phase and then actually you befriend it and be like, what are you trying to tell me? It's actually a really great tool to help you uncover what your truth is or what kind of maybe is coming up for you, and great time for kind of organizing, editing, you know, all that kind of stuff. You kind of go into like this like organization nesting mode sort of.
I get that big time.
I need to clean out my pantry.
Where you're like, give me the Excel sheet where I need to like, you know, double check my finances, or here's my plan for my blah, and I kind of go into that phase. And again, just talking about that more kind of energetic side of things, you know, they talk about menstruation as being an opportunity for you to feel bliss. And I remember reading that being like, oh, lol, that'll never happen, you know. But actually there's been a couple of times where in the last few cycles where, again, just kind of, I kind of knew when I was going to get my period anyway, but I went to a cacao ceremony, or I kind of planned to go for a swim and with my friends, and I brought it, we went to Vico and it's stunning, and you know, I brought cacao and everything, and then I would have bled that day and I was like, I feel amazing, like I actually feel
if like, you rewind connected. Like 15 yeah. years compared to now and on I'm that like, day.
There was no way yeah. I would have ever thought. And again, that might never, ever occur to someone, you know, someone with endometriosis that, you know, they could be listening to me being like, back off there with your bliss on day one. So it's going to be different. But that ability to kind of create space for yourself. And again, they talk about this 1%. What is the 1% that you can do to rest more when you're bleeding?
Yeah.
Does it mean you're just like lying down for 15 minutes or that you're like taking like three breaths or that you are maybe handing over a household duty to someone else that you would normally do or that you're kind of, you know, trying maybe to kind of block off that day from client meetings. So you're only kind of working with yourself. Maybe mm-hmm. you're working from home. Again, there's so many different layers that you can take from this. And you see people on Instagram who work in this space being like, I'm off now for a few days. I'm kind of taking a step back off social media. I tried to do it last cycle and then just kept going back on. So I'm like, okay, this is a work on for me. You know, so it's there's levels that you can take it. But even that concept of giving yourself the permission to rest, giving yourself the permission to cherish yourself, giving yourself the permission to nourish yourself, see food and exercise as a way of feeling good and celebrating what your body can do rather than trying to punish it. All of these things are annoyingly revolutionary for women. And when I, you know, talk about them, they're like, okay, whatever. And I was there.
Life is short.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm like,
you gotta look after yourself.
Yeah. And there's almost like people refer to this as like, you know, the next wave of feminism. And I'm like, yeah, I'm all for it. Like if this is what it is, I'm like, perfect. Because this was all ancient wisdom that, you know, would have been there in like, you know, the Celtic communities and like Indian communities, like all these different things, and we've lost it totally. Yep. You know, we're kind of living again, if you think about it from the masculine feminine energy, this really like linear way of working, this really linear way of living. And it's starting, people are starting to challenge that a little bit more and bring in these different elements, being like, can I adjust my training? Can I adjust my work? Can I adjust how I'm feeling? Am I tapping into what my hunger signals are? Am I tapping into how I might feel across my menstrual cycle? Start tracking your cycle. That can look differently for everyone, but start having some awareness of your cycle and just have that daily check-in with yourself.
Yeah.
Whether it's physically, emotionally, mentally, whether it's all of the above, and just be open to the idea of learning that you can actually trust your body and there is potentially another way of working, living, training, eating that might make you feel more nourished, more supported, more kind of in tune with your body. And, you know, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by our very own brand, Key for Her. Whether you're feeling the effects of menopause or your menstrual cycle, discover what's key for you in less than 5 minutes with tailored supplement recommendations, information and insights on keyforher.com.
Please have 20% off on us by using the promo code KEYPODCAST in all capitals.
We're going to chat to Sinead as well a bit about our product Key for Menstrual, because I suppose we were coming from a place where we were buying multiple products to be able to help with our menstrual cycles as well, you know, to help balance our hormones, to help with cravings, PMS. We wanted a full multivitamin as well, and we couldn't find it anywhere. And, you know, we had to bring all these, you know, ingredients together to be able to make a product that was an all-in-one, one for women and people with periods to be able to take and just to make it so much easier and more streamlined.
The whole thing is completely overwhelming for women, I think. When we speak, about, you know, nourishing yourself, and supplements do play an important role in addressing symptoms and your overall health. So I'd love to hear your view on that.
Yeah, I think I came across you guys on Instagram and I was like, oh, I just love this concept of it, because you know, I think I was struggling to find a multivitamin that was kind of ticking a lot of those boxes, and a lot of the ones I could find were like prenatal ones or something.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I love that you guys cover all those key kind of nutrients and everything there as well. But what I loved when I saw it first was the ashwagandha.
Yeah.
I was like, amazing, because again, it can go such a great way of just kind of calming the central nervous system, helping with PMS, kind of helping it's with lovely. anxiety, and yeah, just all those things. So I really liked your approach of the more kind of mineral approach. So getting all your B vitamins in, again, so important for your overall health, specifically your menstrual health, magnesium, all of these kind of things. You ticked off basically all the main boxes that I was looking for when I was looking for a multivit.
And even using folate instead of folic acid.
Exactly.
It's more easily absorbed.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, really important, and that's a whole other discussion, but for, you know,
we're
going
to have to get you back in.
but you know, that's the thing where really, if you are someone who is of childbearing age who potentially could get pregnant, like, you should be taking folate. And again, folic acid, it's kind of, you know, they say folic acid, but really it kind of, in my opinion, and it should be the folate.
We've got you covered in this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's why I was just like, brilliant, you know. And again, you know, if you're trying to conceive, you might need to take more of a kind of prenatal multivitamin, but just, this is more like a just in case kind of a thing. So I always, for me anyway, ticked a lot of the boxes that I was looking for, and has kind of kept me semi sane while I'm going through crazy crazy work. Still had a bit of a kind of a mad cycle, but that was purely stressed because the last,
like,
month's been mental.
It seems you tend to go back to stress quite a lot, and I think that's a major thing we all need to look at.
Yeah, well for me, it's my main one for sure. You know, it's gonna be different for different people.
I think for everyone at the moment, but especially after the last 2 years of the most stressful time
it's
ever.
It's been mental when we think about it. And I actually was talking to a client this morning about it, where I was like, the world turned upside down, and then we got used to what we were doing there. We all built habits and we built routines. We were going for our daily walks and we were doing all this. And then all of a sudden, we were literally thrown back into normal life. And now we're trying to manage what that new normal is. I know this whole thing about new normal, but we're trying to, you know, get into our routines and do all this. And our routines have gone, our habits have gone. So I find that a lot of people are struggling again to figure out how to incorporate, myself included, you know, the habits that they're going to support their health and well-being, how to kind of find the time to get that daily walk in because they loved it, but now maybe they're back commuting again, or, you know, just things like this. So
big,
you know,
change,
stress, like so much change over the
people
last
changed
years.
Their jobs. It gave them the, I suppose, the bandwidth and headspace to be able to say, actually, I've been stuck in a job now that I can't physically go in there anymore and I can work from home. To give them the headspace to think about, do I really want to do this anymore? Is it serving me? And it gave them that kind of time to say, actually, I'm going to do a bit of a 360
overhaul. Time of shift and change for a lot of people. But what would be your three top tips then for, you know, menstrual health, and what are your
hormonal
key
health
tips?
Yeah.
Three
key
tips.
Three tips would be, track your menstrual cycle. So even just start day one, you know, just get an idea of whether your cycles are regular, and then build it up as we kind of discuss the bleeding, ovulation, luteal phase, all that. There's so many layers that you can take out. Just start tracking your cycle, have some understanding of what's going on for you. The second one would be is embrace the concept of nourishing yourself. Try not to see food as an enemy. It is there to support your health and well-being, to support your hormones, to give you the nutrients that you need to kind of thrive. And if you are training, to give you the fuel to be able to A, train, but then B, adapt and kind of get whatever, you know, outcome it is that you're looking for. And then the last one is focus on moving to feel good. Again, having goals and training, absolutely amazing. Yes. But, you know, for a lot of us, just
don't feel bad if you can't go to the gym.
Exactly.
Like, do something that
if you don't like the gym, don't go to the gym. Do aerial hoop, do pole dancing, do
jump
hiking,
on your bike,
do whatever, trampolining. Yeah. Like, it doesn't have to be, you know. Now, I'm going to slightly caveat that with, I think in some way, shape or form, we should be doing some sort of weight bearing exercise just for bone health and strength health, and, you know, making sure that you're not going to fall over and break a hip when you're older and everything. And a lot of people tend to forget strength training. So, you know, I'm going to plug that in there because I think it's something that's missed a lot of the time. But look at exercise as a way to have fun, move your body to feel good for your overall health, both physical and mental. But then make sure that you are getting a mix, as I said, of those different things. Try not to be doing the HIIT like every day of the week, even if you love it. Like, just try not to, because
balance.
Your body's, find the balance and try and get a mix of different styles, because that is really what's going to help support your body and your health and your hormone health overall.
Wow.
Brilliant. Yeah. Very good.
That was amazing. Thank you so much.
No problem. I love that.
Thank you so much, Sinead. I really enjoyed that chat. It was absolutely fantastic.
Thanks, guys.
It's quite eye-opening as well for people just to take this bird's eye view of themselves. Step out of themselves for a minute. Take a look. Let's reassess and see how I can bring in these. Like, they sound simple, but, like, not enough people are doing
them. That's what I'm all about.
These changes.
The habits. And, like, that's a big thing. What I do is the habit coaching. So I'm taking all of these things and just trying to put it into a way that helps someone build it up. And I've, you know, had clients and they've had this list of all these things to do from different coaches, but they're like, don't even know where to start with it. So it's trying to make it like slow and steady, sustainable changes. And that's how it's going to work. But, you know, I need a coach too. We all need a coach. Yeah. It's hard to do it yourself. So
how do the women find you, or how do people find you?
Yes, how do people find me if they're interested in learning more? So I'm on Instagram, Go With The Flow Coaching. Nice. And my website's the same, gowiththeflowcoaching.com. And if you're interested in working with me, I offer kind of a number of different services that fall under the women's wellbeing and cycle coaching. So number one is my VIP one-to-one coaching, which I kind of open twice a year. And that's like a 12-week personalized program that's really quite hands-on. I've obviously got my membership then, which is either a yearly or monthly subscription. And that just has lots of on-demand workouts, yoga, all filtered by cycle phase and intensity. Nice. Yeah, that's as well. So
I am signing up.
Yeah. And then, you know, kind of a lot of information about women's health, nutrition, lifestyle as well, so you can kind of go in there and kind of create your toolbox yourself. We also get guest speakers in each month about different topics of to do with menstrual
really
health.
Amazing.
Yeah, this was my vision when I first started. I was like, why does this not exist? So I built it and I was trying to get it out there.
That is incredible.
And if you build it,
this is the plan. And then the last one is I'm in the process of turning kind of what I do into more self-paced courses. So I'll have a kind of 12-week habit coaching program that's all based on kind of the fundamentals of feeling good and nourishing your body. And then I'll also have a kind of train with your cycle at home training program as well. So people will be able to buy that to download on my website probably at the end of the month.
Holy moly. And you're doing retreats as well.
I've got a retreat at the end of June as well, and hopefully down the line. But yeah, so a couple of yoga classes in person as well.
I'm going to try and make one of those.
I'd love to have you.
Oh my gosh, you are busy.
I am busy.
Getting married. What's
the
dress like?
Are we surprised that my cycle was meant to last last month? Yeah, it's all good.
You're getting married at the end of this year, is it?
October. So it's only 4 months away.
So have you started looking for dresses yet?
Yeah, all done. We're pretty much all organized.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. You'd want to be though. You're so busy. Like
some woman.
I know. Well, we're getting a wedding planner because I was like, this is another job. Can't do it. I was like, basically launching a business here by myself.
Turn up on the day. Yeah.
It's like, look, we're just going to have a party. Doesn't matter. Just have a crack.
You love good fun.
Well, best of luck with thank you so much. Hopefully we'll have you on again.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. It was an absolute pleasure. Love
Thanks
talking.
Thanks, Janine.
Yeah, no Woo-hoo. Problem.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Key for Her podcast. We'd be so grateful if you could hit subscribe, rate, and share this podcast with your friends.
For tips, tricks, and hacks on all things perimenopause, menopause, periods, menstrual cycles, and skin health, follow us at Key for Her on TikTok and Instagram.
Check out our website, keyforher.com, for more information.